Welcome into the Unnamed MMA Podcast. I'm Adam Abdallah. Across from me, as always, Jordan Sherwood. How about this? We got video for you this time. If you're listening to us on the ESPN Chicago app, we appreciate it. You can now go to the ESPN Chicago YouTube page and check out the podcast on video. This is going to be something that we're going to do for the UFC events coming up. Not everyone, because we know, like, the cards aren't all great.
It wouldn't have made sense for last week.
Yeah.
It wouldn't have made sense. No offense to Biggie Boy.
No.
Impressive win.
And yeah.
But no, it's UFC 299. That's a little
UFC
more
UFC 300, all the pay-per-views. Yeah. You'll be able to catch us on video here on YouTube. Make sure you subscribe. Hit that subscribe button. Hit that alert button down there so you get an alert whenever we post a new video or go live, where you can watch all of our shows live on YouTube Live, the ESPN Chicago channel. So UFC 299, it's going to be awesome. I think it's better than UFC 300 right now. We're still waiting for this mystery fight that is going to be announced by Dana White.
I think Dana forgot that he said that he was going to announce that.
I think he hopes that we forgot about it. But I don't know. He might. First, before we get to UFC 299, some big news in combat sports,
Let's call it combat sports.
Is this a combat that we're going to see?
I don't know what we're going to see. I'm going to watch it, though, because it's on Netflix.
Yeah, it's on Netflix. So if you didn't see the news, Jake Paul and Mike Tyson are going to fight. 57-year-old Mike Tyson is going to get back in the ring July 20th. On Netflix, if you've got Netflix, you'll be able to watch it. This is like the third live event for Netflix that they're going to be broadcasting, their third live sporting event. So this should be interesting. It kind of came out of nowhere. There's no odds yet because I don't know if people know this, but it's not a sanctioned fight just yet. And if it's an exhibition and won't count for like records or a belt or anything like that, then I don't believe that the U.S. can put out odds. Like your FanDuel's, your Caesars, your whatever won't put out odds. I've seen some loose odds, some offshore odds that some have Jake Paul a favorite, some have Mike Tyson a favorite. I know that even without any boxing training, I don't want to get anywhere near Mike Tyson when he wants to punch someone. So, but Jake Paul is the boxer Paul, right? Like, he's the one. He's not the, like, YouTuber Paul.
That's
the
Logan.
One. That's Logan, right? This is the one that has boxed before. Some people say he's actually pretty good at boxing, but you've seen more of him than I do. We've all seen a bunch of Mike Tyson fights. Mike Tyson was the greatest draw in sports for a long time. What do you think of this fight?
Well, first off, Newsdog, Bovada has released odds on this fight.
The offshore stuff, though.
Offshore, correct, yeah. Paul opening up is a heavy favorite, minus 500.
Wow, minus 500. I'll throw a little change on Mike Tyson.
Right.
I think I will.
Here's the interesting thing for me is that, you know, Jake Paul said that he's no longer taking those fights against, you know, former MMA fighters or guys that were not necessarily boxers, and that he was going to really go after a boxing career and try and win a championship.
Yeah.
Now, does this direction get him there? I mean, I agree with you. A 57-year-old Mike Tyson is as scary as, you know, what was a 22-year-old Mike Tyson for me.
Yeah, right?
Especially if he wants to punch you. I just worry that there isn't going to be that of Mike Tyson. Mike Tyson has become such this likable character now and a guy that's in the forefront, in the mainstream, involving in a lot of different areas. He's a movie star. I don't think he's going to have that ferociousness.
And a lot of people hate the Paul.
Right.
Like, right, a lot of people dislike the Pauls. So this is going to be a thing where I think you see a lot of money come in on Mike Tyson. But again, it's Netflix. They've got a bunch of money. I'm sure the payday is great for both of them. And so, yeah, you kind of, if you're Jake Paul, you kind of put those comments to the side where you say, hey, I'm going to go after this big, you know, real fighting career and real opponents. But Netflix comes in and says, hey, we've got Mike Tyson and we've got a boatload of cash for you to do it. It's kind of hard to say no.
Yeah, no, it makes sense that he would do it from that regard, and he's going to, you know, grow his brand fighting Mike Tyson and being on Netflix. But I mean, I guess it's something I will watch because it's on Netflix
sure.
If it was a pay-per-view, no, thank you. I'm not interested.
No.
I haven't been interested in really any of his pay-per-views. But it's weird. It's weird for me to like look. He wanted to legitimize himself as a professional boxer, but I guess fighting the number one. ranked 8 welterweight in the world. Like, doesn't mean anything to me. Doesn't mean anything to you. Doesn't really mean anything to anybody.
No.
So fighting Mike Tyson, getting a notch on your belt with him on your record.
It gets eyeballs. And it's at Jerry World. It's at the AT&T Stadium in Dallas. So it should be, it should get a lot of eyeballs. It should get a lot of people there. It is Mike Tyson. It's still going to be a draw. All right, let's get into UFC 299. This is going to be a great pay-per-view. This is something we've been waiting a long time for. Any one of these fights on the main card could not only headline a UFC fight night, but I think could probably headline any other UFC pay-per-view. Like, these are phenomenal fights. Let's start with the first fight on the main card, Peter Yan against Song Yadong. Peter Yan, a minus 120 favorite here. He's a former champion. Everybody knows what he's going to bring. Yan has dropped 3 straight, 4 of his last 5. He's still a contender, but he needs to get back onto the right track, and a start would be beating Peter Yan, who is a slight favorite, minus 120, Song Yadong minus 105.
Yeah, I mean, it's shocking that Peter Yan has lost 3 fights in a row and is staring at 4 losses, you know, in a row. And when you definitely get to that point in your career in the UFC, like, it's chopping block time. And I don't believe that that's a reality for Peter Yan. I think if Peter Yan isn't successful on Saturday night, he'll still be with the UFC because the guy is just uber talented. I mean, he rightfully should be the champion, but he had an illegal knee that he threw, and it disqualified him and gave Aljamain Sterling the championship. And then, you know, he lost again, and then he lost a controversial fight to Sean O'Malley, which, by the way, if you continue to rewatch that fight time and time again, the more you side on Sean O'Malley actually did win the fight. Mm-hmm. As frustratingly as for me, I had Peter Yan winning that fight, and I thought he was going to smoke Sean O'Malley, but he didn't. I still like Yan in this fight at the odds that it's currently at. I think there's tremendous value on it. It is another step up in competition for Song Yadong, who is a thumper. The guy carries power. He comes from a great camp at Team Alpha Male. That's Uriah Faber's camp. And we've seen him evolve as this young sensation to now a cerebral and established bantamweight. And this is the type of fight that gets him into that conversation of potentially being in a title fight. There was always concern about Song Yadong and his ability to go hard for 5 rounds. I think he answered those questions. He's headlined a couple of fight cards, so he's familiar with those championship rounds. I just think that we're going to get the best version of Peter Yan. And in my opinion, the best version of Peter Yan is a champion of this division. I don't believe that the best version of Song Yadong is a champion. If Yadong lands a strike early at him, like if he establishes that power early, Yan's going to be chasing, and then that's not the scenario he wants to be in. He wants to get out to that head start where Yadong is chasing, and maybe he has to look for some takedowns and sneak away some rounds. So what I'm getting at is not official play. I'm going to have several at FatJackSports.com available for UFC 299. This is not going to be one of them, but I think Peter Yan, there's value in him straight up on the money line to win the fight.
All right, so Peter Yan minus 120. If we look at method of victory here, we like to do a little value hunting here on the Unnamed MMA podcast if you're watching or listening for the first time. Peter Yan by points is plus 150. Yadong by points is plus 195. Yadong by knockout is plus 470, and Peter Yan by knockout is plus 600.
I think it's both guys. If you're leaning either way and you want value, it's via decision.
Okay.
Peter Yan has lost, you know, 5 times in his career, and none of them have been by finish. The 1 DQ, the 4 via decision. Yadong kind of in the same ilk. So I believe that if you don't believe that, just throw, and the money line is good. I mean, it's good value.
Minus 120 is a good value because we're going to get into some fights here that are a little bit worse value than that here coming up.
Right, but I think just, you know, straight up money line, Peter Yan, I think just his talent's going to come to fruition. We're going to see the best version of Yan that we've seen, and a guy that's always a difficult matchup, and I like him just straight up on the money line.
All right, our next fight, Gilbert Burns, plus 135 against Jack De La Maddalena, who is minus 175, the favorite. Burns earned a victory last spring around this time in Miami, defeating Jorge Masvidal. But then the quick turnaround against our guy, Bilal Muhammad, injured his shoulder during the fight, lost the fight to Bilal Muhammad. De La Maddalena has got three victories in each of his first 2 years in the UFC. He beat Kevin Holland in Nocha UFC. He's come. I mean, this is a guy who's deservedly a minus 175 favorite because we don't know. Burns hasn't fought since losing to Bilal Muhammad, so we don't know what he's going to look like coming off that loss.
Yeah, deserving to be a favorite, but now dramatic step up in competition. Mm-hmm. And no disrespect to Kevin Holland or Randy Brown or Danny Roberts, guys at De La Maddalena. What's successful is, I mean, look, he's 6-0 in the UFC, 16-2 overall in his career. Very good fluid boxing that he possesses. Very good striker, finisher when he sees the finish, as an opportunity. Case in point with the victory over Randy Brown. The worry, at least initially, the headlines on this fight are his short notice split decision win against Basil Khabib's. And the reason for it is because he got taken down. He got taken down a lot in that fight. Now, a lot of people are arguing, Adam, well, he got taken down because he was hunting for the guillotine. And when you hunt and try and snatch on a guillotine, like you're basically giving yourself up. You're mm-hmm. giving yourself back because he thought he could get submission against Basil. Well, you don't do that against Gilbert Burns. Gilbert Burns is a wizard on the ground.
Yeah.
Gilbert Burns is light years ahead of anybody that...
Well, if you remember the fight against Bilal Muhammad, that was a lot of stand-up. Because after he hurt his shoulder, he didn't really want to go for the takedown. So that was a lot of stand-up fighting.
Sure. And that's not just an example for Gilbert Burns in that fight. But throughout his career, he sometimes has fallen in love with his hands. And look, when he made the transition from lightweight to welterweight, the power carried over. He wasn't going through those tough weight cuts. And he has power. He better not fall in love with that because, Jack Del Maddalena is going to likely knock him out mm-hmm. if that is. And Burns has been knocked down before. He's been knocked out. Kamaru Usman knocked him out in the title fight. But I'm not looking too much at the 10-year age gap. I think Gilbert Burns still has, plenty of opportunity to become, a title contender, perhaps fight for another championship in this division. I'm on the dog right now.
I'm on the dog because...
I think Gilbert Burns, if he can get this to where he will be the best.
Yeah.
The concern still on Jack Della Maddalena and what he has just been being taken down. And look, his last two wins, Kevin Holland is a very good fighter. We're going to talk about him next in a big fight. Split decision win. So he's not dominating guys as he's evolving with this competition. And Gilbert Burns has been in there with the best. He's fought for championships. And I think that Della Maddalena is going to have to keep this fight standing for as long as he can. Will Burns hunt for takedowns? I mean, that's not necessarily part of his game a lot. Mm-hmm. Like he does it, but he'd much rather, once the fight gets down, then he's going to go to work and look for some submissions or some TKO, a ground and pound. But at plus money, I'm on the dog.
All right. Gilbert Burns plus 135 right now. Method of victory here. Burns by submission, like you mentioned, plus 360. Burns by points is plus 500. Then we get back to Maddalena, plus 160 by knockout and plus 300 by points.
Yeah. I mean, I think I don't like the decision for Burns.
Mm-hmm.
I think Burns is going to have to, get him down and submit him.
Yeah.
I don't think we're going to see a fight where Burns is controlling him on the ground and mm-hmm. dominating him that way. And quite frankly, if he doesn't get to the ground, I don't think Burns is going to win the decision with this fight standing. So if you're on the Della Maddalena side, I could see the knockout happening because Burns' chin has been questioned before, and Della Maddalena certainly is cerebral and dangerous in that regard. Another thing to consider, and I don't hold as much weight on it, but it's in Miami. Burns trains in Florida.
Right.
So there's going to certainly be that.
He's used to the humidity.
Well, and it's not the humidity, but the crowd in his favor, the comfort of sleeping in his own bed.
Yeah.
There's a little bit to that.
Yeah. So we'll sprinkle a little bit on the dog.
I think it might be a straight up play.
All right.
I think that might be one of the releases at FatJackSports.com.
Little hint there.
Preview.
All right, our next fight, one guy is making his UFC debut. He is an underdog. That is Michael Page. He is making his UFC debut. He's got an 18-fight run in Bellator. He is plus 105, the underdog to Kevin Holland. Kevin Holland's had consecutive stoppage wins over Santiago Ponzinibbio, Michael Chiesa to start 2023.
Chiesa.
And he dropped a split decision to Jack De La Maddalena, who we just mentioned. You said Kevin Holland. He is minus 135, the favorite here. Money coming in on Page, because I looked earlier and Kevin Holland was minus 145. So money coming in on the underdog here, who has yet to see the UFC octagon, making his debut on UFC 299.
Yeah, I need to see the contract for Kevin Holland. Has he written in the contract that he's going to just agree to stand and trade with Michael Venom Page? Because look, Kevin Holland is that type of fighter. Like, he's a showman. He likes to entertain the fans. He's uber talented. I mean, he's got very, very difficult length and athleticism to mirror for the welterweight division. He's got power. He's got takedowns. Mm-hmm. He's got submissions. The thing is he fights dumb sometimes. He just doesn't fight with a great fight IQ. And if he's going to want to test himself against Michael Venom Page on the feet, that's a very difficult proposition for me, thinking that he's going to win the fight. Michael Venom Page is an assassin, mm-hmm, when it comes to striking. And certainly he didn't fight the level of competition that he would fighting in the UFC, but you can't ignore the, 16-2 record said in Bellator.
Two losses were in championship fights, too. So he hasn't lost a fight where it's not been a championship fight.
Right, exactly. So, and the fights that he's lost, you know, he got knocked out by Douglas Lima, and Lima was uber talented at the time. He's kind of tailed off, you know, during his career, and Logan Storley like took him down and you know, controlled him. Like, that's what Kevin Holland has to do. Don't mess around with this guy in the feet. Take him down to the ground. Mm-hmm. But the thing is though, Michael Venom Page also his length and his footwork. By the way, bigger cage at UFC 299 because it's not at the Apex. Thank God for that. But you know, he's difficult, obviously, for you know, shorter fighters, you know, lower arm length. Kevin Holland's got an enormous reach.
Yeah.
Enormous reach for the division.
If you look at the odds here, the judges believe that this is, or the odds makers believe that this is going to the judges' scorecard here, because the two methods of victory that are most popular right now, Kevin Holland by points at 2-1 and Michael Page by points at plus 220. Everything else by knockout is plus 450 for each guy. And then by submission, Kevin Holland by submission plus 750. Michael Page by submission is 24-1.
Yeah, no, he's not submitting anybody. No. I mean, I think he might have difficulty submitting you and me.
I'm not dealing with that. I'm tapping right away. I'm like, nope, we're done.
Yeah, exactly. That submission prop of Kevin Holland at plus 750 is very interesting.
Ooh,
because he's got such unorthodox submissions too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's got a couple of Bravo chokes, which are, you know, not the same as we were just talking about the guillotines with Della Maddalena. So that might be a sprinkle there, but I'm just going to be of the belief that Kevin Holland might want to entertain the fans a little bit early on. You know, get Michael Venom Page going a little bit, but let's not mess around. We got to get this fight to the ground, because look, the last time that he wanted to entertain the fans, the fight was stopped against Stephen Wonderboy Thompson.
Yeah.
You know, he did it for the fans when he took the fight on minutes notice against Hamzat Chimaev. Chimaev didn't do the tap at the beginning of the fight and just took him down. And
that was it.
I mean, Kevin Holland was all she wrote. So
yeah,
I think Kevin Holland at that money line price, maybe even let more of that European money, I believe, come in on Michael Venom Page.
Okay.
Get that value down a little bit further for Kevin Holland, and then you jump on it.
All right. Our next fight, an interesting one, because it is a five-round co-main event. Dustin Poirier, Benoit Saint-Denis. This should be a great one. Saint-Denis is minus 215 on the money line. Dustin Poirier, plus 165. This could be the headliner of UFC 299, and I would be perfectly okay with it, because this fight is going to be great. Saint-Denis has won five straight, all by finish, and Poirier is coming off a second-round knockout to Justin Gaethje. So this one should be very good, because you've got Saint-Denis, who's on this rise, Dustin Poirier coming off a knockout, and we've seen with guys, Volkanovski, who we just talked about, coming off a knockout, got knocked out again. So So, like, guys coming off knockouts, how are they going to respond in their next fight? This is going to be very interesting, but a ton of money. Obviously, the heavy favorite on Benoit Saint-Denis at minus 215.
Oh, yeah, and that's the first question you ask regarding the head kick knockout of, you know, where is Dustin Poirier now in his career?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the dude is never in a boring fight. Never. And he's been in war after war after war. And at some point, the wheels do fall off. And he's unbelievably talented, and I would not at all balk at the value on Dustin Poirier right now. When was the last time you could get him at plus, really, at any plus money? I think he was the favorite against Justin Gaethje in that BMF fight. Terrible title.
We'll get to that at UFC 300.
But
awful.
So tough.
Mm-hmm.
So talented all around. Obviously a champion and a guy that's familiar with championship rounds. But a risky fight against a guy that's just on the rise, a meteoric rise.
Yeah.
You know, with the finishes and how impressive that he's looked, and the money flew in on Saint-Denis. Like, you could have grabbed Saint-Denis earlier on in the week at like $1.50, $1.60. It's now 220.
Yeah, it's up to 215 on FanDuel
right now. You can't play him at that. You just can't. Even though I could see like a very quick finish by Saint-Denis. The guy's got power everywhere. I don't think he's going to have cardio issues. I don't think he's going to be threatened by submissions that Dustin Poirier is going to show. It's just, is he ready for this level of competition, this level of veteran experience that Dustin Poirier is going to bring to the fight? I think if I have to play a side, it's going to be on the under.
Under? Okay.
I think we're seeing a finish in this fight, and that's either lending to the belief that Dustin Poirier has seen his better days.
Yeah.
They are behind him, and just Saint-Denis just got power and ability to finish fights at a moment's notice, or it's that Saint-Denis biting off more than he can chew, because Dustin Poirier is also a finisher. I mean, I'm looking at the stats right now. Of the 29 wins, 22 have come inside the distance, and all varieties. You know, he's not one or the other. He's knocking people out. He's getting submissions. He's getting people via injury. Conor McGregor. So it's going to be a fantastic fight. I don't buy it. If there was anything, if people were thinking about the storyline with Dustin Poirier, didn't know about the fight or didn't sign it, remember that?
Like, that's
communication, have you. There's also, as I was talking about, Gilbert Burns. Dustin Poirier trains, lives in Florida. So, you know, he'll have certainly home field advantage there. But I like Benoit Saint-Denis to win the fight. He'll probably would go in a parlay that I would recommend.
Okay.
But also, I think the under, I don't have the odds in front of me.
I've got 1.5 on FanDuel, and it's heavily juiced to the over 1.5. You might have to get an alternate at 2.5 and see what that looks like.
Yeah, I'm looking at probably the under, maybe that under at 2.5 at $1.30.
Okay.
Could make sense.
All right.
But I could also see like a later finish happening too. So, you know, maybe it's over 2.5 at $1.03, but fight doesn't go to decision. Well, that's just heavily to the over.
Yeah, I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to sprinkle both Saint-Denis by submission at plus 165 and Saint-Denis by knockout at plus 340. Like, I think you can find some of these specials where it's, you know, Saint-Denis by finish. You know what I mean? So you can get that at, like, you know, Benoit Saint-Denis to win by knockout or submission, and I'll probably do that because I don't think this goes to the judges' scorecard, like you said. So I'm going to go with Benoit Saint-Denis to win by knockout or submission. I'm going to try to find that here on FanDuel to give you exactly what it could possibly look at. Like, I think that to me is where the value is, because, like you said, there's no value on to take Saint-Denis at minus 215 right now. Throw him in a parlay if you want to, but I don't think you're getting Saint-Denis at less than that at this point. Like, it's only going to go up.
Yeah, it is, I believe, only going to go up. I think I've also, you know, I've recommended this type of play before on previous podcasts where if you like a certain fighter, couple it with like round two to start or round three to start. Now, that didn't work for the Alex. I'm going to continue to bring it up. And look, that's what that's what we do. If something doesn't work and it's not it wasn't a winner.
Yeah,
I don't shy away from it. I was all over Alexander Volkanovski to win his fight against Ilya Topuria. And I said, well, get some more value in Volkanovski. He wins round three to start. I think you could play that with Saint-Denis. with St. Denis to win, round three to start St. Denis, round two to start, if you want to get that price down, or you're going to have to stick them into a parlay, which we'll have a parlay recommendation at the end of the show.
All right, our main event, the fight that Sean O'Malley has been waiting for because he doesn't recognize the first fight as a loss.
No, I think he's turned around on it now.
I saw an interview with him from this week, and he was like, I didn't lose that fight.
Oh,
so he's wearing a shirt that says undefeated Sean O'Malley.
What a punk.
So, I mean, if he's wearing shirts that say undefeated Sugar Sean, he doesn't believe he lost that fight. It's Sean O'Malley. It's Marlon Vera. It's the only guy to beat Sean O'Malley, even though Sean O'Malley doesn't recognize it. It is the rematch. Sean O'Malley, he's got the pink and purple hair with the pink shorts. Maybe that's what we should wear. You're in a suit. I'm just in our ESPN Chicago quarter zip. Maybe you wear the suit and I will wear the Sugar Sean. I'll get the pink.
You have to stand up then.
No one wants to see that. I'll just tell people I'm going to tell people that
I got black for wearing a suit. I was told I have to wear like a black t-shirt.
No, I mean, I could wear a suit. I forgot mine, full disclosure. I was going to bring a suit jacket and just, like, put it on. So we matched a little bit, but I definitely forgot.
Okay, life goes for 300 at the next.
We'll dress up for UFC 300. Maybe tuxes for 300.
That's right, yeah. It is more of a black tie event.
Exactly. Sean O'Malley, a heavy favorite in this fight, minus 280. Marlon Vera, plus 210. I mean, you know, obviously, Marlon Vera beat him last time. But that was so long ago that I think people just start to believe Sean O'Malley when he says he's undefeated. So this is going to be a very good fight. I think Sean O'Malley wins this fight, minus 280. You can't really bet on that, so we're going to do some value hunting. But what do you think of this fight?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't want to believe the hype in Sean O'Malley, you know, when he first burst onto the scene. And then I kind of felt he was spoon-fed a couple of opponents. Then I'm like, all right, here we go. You know, the Marlon Vera loss, you know, brings that back into reality a little bit. But, you know, again, like, and then has the controversial eye poke with Pedro Munhoz. And then I'm like, all right, the Peter Yan fight. He lost that fight. He lost it. I watched it. He lost it.
No. Nope.
No, he didn't. He won the fight. And then I watched it again. And then, like, all right, he's going to be humbled by Aljamain Sterling. Here's where it happens. Aljamain Sterling's going to wrestle him and take him down. And then just the dude is a sniper.
Yeah.
He is a sniper. We have an opportunity, this whole card, and particularly in the main card, like, to see some really good precision strikers. Like, Dustin Poirier is one of the best. And Michael Venom Page is phenomenal. And we got another one in Sean O'Malley.
Mm-hmm.
Just his distance and his timing, his accuracy is very hard to mirror in camp when you're preparing for it and see it coming when you're in there with him. Now, luckily, Marlon Vera's been in there. You know, he's been in there for 4 minutes or whatever it was with. So he's got a little bit to play off of. The first thing I'm going to pay attention to in this fight early on is Marlon Vera going right after those calf and leg kicks? Is he trying to chop down that tree?
Because
one vulnerability in Sean O'Malley, not just in that fight, but with Andre Sukumo, you know, against the Asian Sensation years ago, and the second fight for Sean O'Malley, like, couldn't fight. He got hurt. And, like, that's been an issue for Sean O'Malley, and it's reoccurring for him. So that's the first thing. The other thing is the big storyline that's going on this week, and it's floating out there that Marlon Vera has not had a good camp. So it's out there. Like, Aljamain Sterling came out with it, and Sean O'Malley reiterated that that's what he's heard. And obviously some of these storylines get manufactured. Sometimes they don't. But look, we heard the same storyline about Henry Cejudo a couple of weeks ago in his fight with Merab Dvishvili, even though we both felt Merab Dvishvili was going to dominate and win that fight.
Didn't matter.
He had a bad camp. I mean, that was the storyline. So has Marlon Vera had a bad camp? Is there an injury that's preventing Marlon Vera from being at his best?
Mm-hmm.
You have to consider it because it's out there. It's news, whether it's fluff or not. I certainly have to pay attention to it. My one issue is that Marlon Vera is not a wrestler. So I want to see Sean O'Malley versus Merab. I want to see Sean O'Malley versus Merab. If he could just handle the machine coming after him and looking for takedown after takedown after takedown. If you're on Marlon Vera's side, you're asking, like, okay, A, he's a guy that doesn't get knocked out. Now,
doesn't get taken down either.
Well, he doesn't get taken down, correct. But he's not a wrestler.
No.
So he's not looking for takedown. So the two things where Sean O'Malley knocks him out, well, Marlon Vera doesn't really get knocked out. Okay, maybe I'm on Vera's side. Will Vera wrestle? No, he's not a wrestler.
Yeah.
The other thing is can Sean O'Malley handle those championship rounds? Is his cardio going to work? Because he cuts a massive amount of weight to get to bantamweight. Mm-hmm. He has definitely hinted at the fact that at some point he'll have to move up to featherweight because of his body type. You know, Marlon Vera gets better over time. I think I saw a stat that, like, in every single one of Marlon Vera's fights outside of the Sean O'Malley fight, he's lost the first round.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't get going until he gets going in the second or third round. So, can he survive the first round against Sean O'Malley? I think we're getting a finish. You can't play Sean O'Malley at 280. Like, that's...
No.
What's his odds to win via knockout? It's probably like 110.
Plus 250.
Plus 250 win by knockout?
To win by knockout. He's plus 125 to win by points, plus 250 to win by knockout. Marlon Vera by knockout, plus 460. Vera by points is plus 650.
I mean, even when he was compromised in the fight, Sean O'Malley, he was still scoring until he fell. And then he took that elbow and really couldn't defend himself anymore. So... if you're on Sean O'Malley, I wouldn't hate the plus 250.
Mm-hmm.
I think that that's certainly playable. And I think you have to look for a finish in this fight. I don't believe we're getting a five-round fight from Sean O'Malley.
A sprinkle on O'Malley by knockout at plus 250. I like it. So our plays here, we're going to go Peter Yan minus 120, Gilbert Burns plus 135, Kevin Holland minus 135, and a sprinkle of Sean O'Malley by knockout at plus 250. I have two fights in our parlay, O'Malley and St. Denis. Anything else to add to this parlay that you're liking? Maybe something in the prelims here. Because I don't see a lot of value in putting any of these other guys in the parlay because their odds, like, it's too even on the main card, right?
So if you want me to point out, like, a bigger-ish favorite, I mean, Mateusz Gamrot should handle RDA pretty simply, but, you know, the odds makers indicate that he's minus 480 right now on FanDuel.
Yeah.
I think Michelle Paheya is going to beat Mikhail Olajacek.
Okay.
But I like Paheya just straight up on the money line at $1.50, so I'm not too worried about actually inserting him and getting some value into the parlay. But I think the parlay is fine. I think that, you know, I want to just throw out a couple of just straight up money lines.
All right. So right now our parlay, I'm going to put Gamrot in there just because it does boost it from minus 102 to plus 140. So we're going to go O'Malley, Denis, and Gamrot. That pays three legs plus 140.
Okay.
I like it.
That's fine. Yeah. We'll handle that. And then on the prelims, I really, like, want to believe that Jelton Almeida is special.
Almeida's on a prelim for this, like, main event. Like,
I know. This fight against Blades was supposed to headline Brazil a couple of months ago.
Yeah.
But then it got rescheduled. Actually, Blades had to pull out, and that was when Almeida handled Derek Lewis for five rounds. I want Jelton Almeida to be special. I think he's an interesting, stylistic fighter for light heavyweight or heavyweight, whatever fight that he competes in. I think Curtis Blaydes is a bad matchup for him. So I like Curtis Blaydes on the money line straight up. I think just he's a better striker. He's not going to be fooled by Jelton Almeida's kind of one-trick pony, if you will, double leg, takedown, and handle. And I think Jelton Almeida might struggle a little bit with handling a big guy like Curtis Blaydes. So I like Curtis Blaydes straight up on the money line. And then a small sprinkle on Chookagian over Macy Barber. She's about a 164 underdog.
All right. That is UFC 299. Make sure you get all of Jordan's picks on FatJackSports.com. Head to FatJackSports.com right now. Sign up. Get March Madness. Get the rest of the NBA season. You've got all of Jordan's picks right there. And you can sign up today and get Jordan's picks right there. Follow him on Twitter at WoodOnESPN1000. You can follow me on Twitter at Adam A. Abdallah. And we will be back next week. Just on the podcast for the Unnamed MMA Podcast. Thanks for listening and watching.